The Persistent and Nasty podcast is a series of interviews and informal discussions with inspiring women and other marginalised voices in theatre, film and beyond. From actors to activists, we aim to amplify these voices and invite the world to stay nasty. Hello, you gorgeous lot, and welcome to another episode of the Persistent and Nasty podcast. Elaine here, how are you all doing? Hope that you are looking after yourself, being kind to yourself and each other. Today, I chat with Charlotte McLean, dancer, performer and choreographer, about her career and new work, Futuristic Folk Tales, which is touring right now. Today, it opens in London at The Place, and then it arrives at the Tramway in Glasgow on the 26th and 27th of April. All details for Futuristic Folk Tales are in the show notes of today's episode. If you enjoy the podcast and support the work that we do, you can help us by supporting us in a couple of different ways. You can like, download, share, review, comment on the podcast. That makes a huge difference, and also on all of our social media. That algorithm loves all those shares and likes. Or if you can and are able to, you can help us financially by becoming a persistent pal or a nasty hero. The links to do that are in the show notes of today's episode as well. Or if you just want to give us a one-off donation, you can also do that. We are extremely grateful to all of you who support us in all the various ways that you do. It means so much to Louise and I know I say it every week, but it doesn't make it any less true. Thank you, thank you, thank you. You can follow us on social media, Twitter at Persistent Nasty, Instagram at Persistent and Nasty, Facebook Persistent and Nasty. Check out the website www.persistentandnasty.co.uk. Where if you have any ideas for a blog or an article you wish to write, you can find all the details for that on the website. You can always email us as well at persistentandnasty@gmail.com. Oh, for today's episode, I was hoping for much more spring-like weather this week, and it's not seemed to come, so maybe something with a little bit of heat in it. Maybe you fancy a little espresso, get that energy going, maybe a chai latte, or you know, you can always just have a good old cup of tea. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. Charlotte McLean, welcome to the Persistent and Nasty podcast.
Thank you, lovely to be here.
It's lovely to have you. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. We've just been in Switzerland with the new work, and now we're in London before coming to Bonnie Scotland. So yeah, enjoying all of that.
Excellent. And the new work is Futuristic Folk Tales, which we will talk about in a little minute. But before we do that, Charlotte, let's have a little potted history of you. How did you become part of this industry of ours? Like, were you, you know, tap dancing at a young age?
Not tap dancing, actually. I was doing Scottish Highland dancing. From, I guess, the day I could walk, probably. Mum took me along and forced me for quite a while to do that. Some of the times I enjoyed it, some of the times it was a challenge, but I was quite good at it, so I kept at it. And then when I was 13, my high school like put on this trip to go watch some dance at Scottish Dance Theatre in Dundee, and I'm from Arbroath, so that's just up the road. And if you liked fitness and if you liked PE, you got invited along to watch some dancers wriggling about the stage. And that was my first introduction to contemporary dance. And I was just, I think I just was blown away. I was like, wow, that's a job. People can do that. Like, before that, I wanted to be a PE teacher. And then pretty much from then, I got right into dance. And the current artistic director of Scottish Dance Theatre now, Joanne, he was the first person to ever teach me a contemporary dance class. So it feels quite nice to, be standing on my own in this industry now, like, seeing him and having all these inspirations just down the road from me, really, which is quite funny. Not a lot of people in Arbroath, or I'm not even sure if Dundee, like, know what contemporary dance is. And I mean, I certainly didn't growing up. So yeah, started some ballet classes, started some contemporary classes. Don't know how I managed to get myself down to London to train at London Contemporary Dance School. And then got a job in Switzerland, of all places, when I graduated. And then, yes, started making work, started making dance theatre shows. The first one being a solo show I have called and now this new show, Futuristic Folktales. So yeah, thank you, Mum, for sending me to Highland Dancing.
How long were you in Switzerland for?
I'm kind of still there, actually. I went there first in 2017, and then when it was all this corona, got a bit stuck there, and then decided to apply for like the work permit and everything, learned a bit of German, and now I've got some good links there, and yeah, managing to work between Switzerland, London, and Scotland, which is a bit wild but quite fun as well.
Amazing. And you kind of talked about going to London to train. How was that? Like leaving Arbroath and going down south, and because it's
Yeah.
such a shift, no matter what age I think you are.
Absolutely. I mean, I left school when I was 18 and I went to the Scottish School of Contemporary Dance for 2 years in Dundee, the space, before coming down to London, just so I could work and save up as much money as I could. That was like the dream at the time when I was 18, like, I'm gonna go down to London. And yeah, it was wild. Like, London is such an addictive place. You just want to see everything and do everything and go to every dance show and take every dance class, and yeah, it's quite exhausting. So I like it now. I can just pop in, do a project or two, bring the show here, and leave again.
Bye.
Yeah, exactly. But it was a big shock. Yeah, coming from a tiny wee fishing, well, it's not that tiny, but it's tiny compared to London, town called Arbroath. So yeah, but I have to say I enjoyed it. Yeah,
Was it a
absolutely.
year or 3 year course that you were on down there?
3 year course. Yeah. So I did my bachelor's. So yeah, good amount of time to meet people and get to know the scene and watch lots of theatre and dance, and just get a kind of better understanding also politically what the world is to me and what my body is in this world, and how it looks, because I mean the diversity of London is just, I find, the most beautiful thing about it. I mean, I always say, and I say it in my solo, nobody in London is from London, and that's so exciting. So yeah, that was a big eye-opener, in terms of that as well.
So you did your 3 years, and how was that, like, as a woman, first of all, I guess, and because I think this question kind of ties into what Futuristic Folktales is when we talk about the first womb and things like that. How was, that kind of sense of being a female, a young female in the contemporary dance world?
Yeah, it was exciting and electric, and there was a lot of fine line between what could be perceived as kind of abuse of power or kind of different dynamics, especially in the studio. And I was quite lucky enough to find a group of women and non-binary people who kind of wanted to stand up for that. We started the kind of movement band. We've had many names, but we're now called Bad Body Chaos Code. We're on a bit of a hiatus at the moment, but we're doing it just a few festivals. That's also because Corona is, yeah, catapulted us all across the world again, back to our homes, or new places. But when we were all in London, it was this like this this team of people that were together and that were kind of able to share these experiences or talk about it. Or I remember my friend Izzy, who's now doing a lot of work that inspires my choreographic work. She's trained as a dancer, but now she's working as a fertility awareness method teacher, all things menstruality, menstrual related. Menstrual, that word.
I was like, menstruality. I'm loving that. Like,
Menstrual.
it's, yeah. Brilliant.
So yeah, and she was the first person that started like London Contemporary Dance School Feminist Society, and that was like a pinnacle moment for us as well. So yeah, there was all of the things that you could imagine happening, I think. But I was glad to have a gang beside me and around me.
Yeah, it's so important, like that kind of group that you and community that you've create when, especially when you go somewhere new. And I think anybody who's listening, who's maybe going to train or is in the middle of training or has trained, can probably be like, yeah, actually the community that you find is really important to keep you going, especially in, you know, those moments of what can be perceived as abuses of power. I think, you know, I would imagine that the cross in the theatre world and the dance world are very similar in that aspect, and also just where we sit politically, as you were talking about as well. And can you tell us a little bit about your process as a choreographer? And obviously you mentioned your first piece of work, and then we're going to talk about your second piece that is touring just now.
Yeah, I guess it's a lot to do with the things that I've experienced. That's all I can really speak truth from. And that was where and my solo started out as. Yeah, just as I was graduating, I was creating a solo, just as a way to kind of stay sane in London and ground myself, and as a bit of a kind of journal therapy, actually. And then yeah, that was in 2017. And then during the corona time, having a bit of time away from the solo to really reassess and think what that might be. And then during that time, having some experiences with my womb that in Switzerland were a very different kind of world than what it was in the UK. Like I had an abortion and a miscarriage, and that was just a very different way to receive that in Switzerland than it would have been in the UK if I was there. And also at the time, my best friend we were kind of doing Corona together was from Poland. So knowing that if I was in Poland, how different that would have been. So this really yeah, this is when it kind of spun into the work that it was this kind of very autobiographical personal thing, and heavily inspired by the group that we started with when I was studying, to kind of follow through these themes. And what is it when I do that by myself? Okay, it's a solo, so I talk about me. Did it at the Fringe, touring it still, having lots of fun. There are, yeah, lots of Scottish Highland dance and improvisation and songs, and I call my wee granny Rose as well, which is one of my favourite parts about the show. Hard blather
I
anyway.
love that.
Yeah. And then coming on to futuristic folktales, I guess since the experiences I had with my womb, I was really wondering, hey, what is it for other people who perhaps want to reproduce, who don't have wombs or who have varying relationships or kind of ways of working with their womb, or yeah, dysphoric states, or are in queer couples or adoption, fostering, what is that for lots of different people? And then yeah, that's what we've what we've created now, with similar through lines to And, like the Scottish Highland Dancing, theatre, dance, text, song. Well, not so much song, more sound. So yeah, I guess the process is just that of listening, I think, listening to what I'm interested in at the moment. And for the past 10 years, it's definitely been surrounding reproductive justice. Like I want and I wonder what that is for a lot of people, especially working all over the place, like even just so close to the UK, like how many different laws and legislations there are or
Yeah.
aren't, in many different countries, even between Scotland and England, to be honest. Like it can be, quite different ways to access different things. So yeah, something like that.
It's really, as we have this, we record this podcast. I have my period right now, and I've got endometriosis, so I have a lot of feelings and a relationship with my womb. Like right now, it feels like it is trying to destroy me. So that it's very, and I think it's one of the things that we are getting better about talking about as a society, but we're nowhere near there yet. We're still, when do we start having the conversation with young people about it? Whether that and how, because I don't think it's dealt with, maybe it is dealt with better at school, I don't know. Someone who's in primary teaching can let me know if it is dealt well with. Because it's a conversation that I think needs to start at a really young age for everyone. What it is, what it means.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, I mean, like this is a lot of the reason that I make my work, and my sister is a primary school teacher, and she doesn't want to talk about wombs. And I yeah, it's I don't know why. We grew up, we were born out of the same womb, and we have very different outlooks on life. And we really a lot of the time have to just agree to disagree because we just fight and we just argue, and our mum has raised very passionate beings, which is great, but we're really standing up for what we believe in, and what we believe in is a lot of the time very different. So yeah, I mean, I'm sure there are other primary school teachers who have a different kind of opinion than my wee sister, but yeah, I absolutely agree with you, and yeah, believe the same, like especially for young people, for it to not be the taboo thing, for it to be, I mean, it is not that for it to be, it is this kind of biological in the body very normal organ. So well, yeah, it's great to hear about endo and your womb, and yeah, I want to talk about it to help people find out things like if they have endometriosis, for example, or to know the kind of health care that they can access.
Yeah, my 4-year-old niece asked me a few weeks ago if I had children, and I said no. And she then said why, and I just said, well, Auntie Elaine's got a disease called endometriosis, and I just, like I'm not going to play down just because she's 4. Like, we need to start using those words. And she was like, okay. And lots of why came after that, and why and why. And you find the way to explain it better is, and some days that's a really emotional question for me, and that day it just happened to be an okay question. When her brother asked me that question, it was an emotional day for me and I couldn't contain it. But him and I have chatted about that now. So it's definitely things that we need to continue to do. And I wonder if you could maybe talk about the creation of futuristic folk tales, because we are talking about it, and how the rehearsal period was, and what your maybe your research, because you mentioned obviously having conversations with other people.
Yeah, I mean, we've been researching the work since 2022, and we have just a never-ending list of beautiful people that we've collaborated with, spanning dance, theatre, music, design, dramaturgy. Yeah, so many wonderful beings with so many different personal views on reproduction, what they want personally, if they want to reproduce, they do not want to reproduce for ecological reasons, they cannot reproduce, they live in a country and are queer, they do want to reproduce. They have different ways of having children, which is not the kind of normal or not normal, but like biological way. So yeah, that has been a really important part of the process. Just to hear these stories, and we've been kind of receiving these stories like kind of folk tales, and when we've had the permission and the care to pass them on, like we've been sharing this and floating around what all of these different variations of reproduction might be, to see what reproductive justice kind of could and should look like in the future. That's what we're aiming for with the work. Not necessarily kind of standing on stage saying this is what I believe, because I can't do that because I'm not on stage. So yeah, it's a bit more open, and with the so many voices that we had, we basically throughout the whole 2 years created so much information and then just stripped it all away, so that it's so bare that the imagination can take you to where you want to go, which I love about it now. We had so many words, bless Nelly, our writer, wrote about a book's worth of words, I think, and now there's like two scenes in it, because we've just so much movement and ideas and so many sounds as well, and we've just stripped it all away to this kind of ethereal bagpipe, sometimes screechy, sometimes stunning sound. So yeah, the process has been that of throw everything in the pot and just take it all away, and there's a really nice kind of broth left over.
I love that little bit of broth.
Yeah,
a little bit of soup. So as you say, this you're not performing in this one, Charlotte. You are a choreographer, so you have two performers in this. Yeah,
yes, yep. Astro Scheidegger and Oro Bell. Astro is a break dancer, actually, and this is his kind of first large scale contemporary dance production. And Oro Bell used to teach me at London Contemporary Dance School, actually, and they are a wonderful, intelligent, creative ninja who's been on the scene for quite a bit, and this is certainly not their first contemporary dance performance, certainly not. So yeah, two great performers on stage together.
Amazing. And as you mentioned, Nelly Kelly, your writer, and we've had Nelly on the podcast. It was a while ago. We should get them back on. That would be great. Yeah. And then you've also got music, haven't you? Is it an original score?
Yeah, exactly. So Malin Lewis, also a great trans piper, musician, composer, extraordinaire from the Isle of Skye, now living in Glasgow, just released a new album. So check out Malin's new album.
Okay, I'll link it in the notes.
Yes. Yeah, original score. And it was just such a relief to find Malin. I'm really happy that Nelly got married because Malin played pipes at Nelly and Molly's wedding, and that's how Nelly was like, I know a piper you might like. And then Malin came along, and yeah, for my kind of history of Scottish Highland dance, dancing this competitively as a child, not really know why I was dancing it, not really knowing why I was dancing it. And then to meet Malin, who also kind of was the same, like played the pipes in all these pipe band competitions and was this like child piper at the competitions. And then for us to meet and kind of talk to each other in 2023, like, oh, you had a childhood like that. I also had a childhood like that. Oh, you just listened to bagpipes all the time. Oh, you just played bagpipes all the time. You watched Highland Dancing all the time. Whoa, what are we doing now? Yeah, we want to keep these traditional things. But they need a bit of updating. They need a bit of a looking at. They need a bit of a kind of reckoning because, yeah, there's such a glorification of violence in them, and that needs to be looked at, especially for, yeah, the future and why we do these forms and where they come from and what they are. Yeah, a lot to be said, and a lot was found out throughout the process. But Malin has made this, yeah. It's almost like a kind of film score on stage, actually. It's yeah, really guttural, bagpipey, droney, bassy. Yeah, I don't even know how to describe it. You just have to come see the show, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and that is it. If you get, I know you've kind of touched on a lot of the themes for futuristic folktales, but if you can kind of give a summary of what people can expect to come and see, that would be amazing. And then we'll talk about where you've been and where you're about to be.
Yeah, I guess folk can come along and watch through people trying a wee bit of Highland dance and taking that from the past into the future and back around the houses again. Lots of text, lots of sound, and the kind of telling of the first ever womb. We don't know what that is. Or what that was, and we don't really pretend to ever find out, but we're interested in kind of recreating a narrative of this kind of epic creation story, which in the culture I grew up in was this kind of Christian Genesis. But I wonder what a kind of futuristic creation story for the womb could look like. So yeah, we're going through lots of portals in time and coming back again, and there's a lot of birth and unbirth on stage. And some of it's quite brutal and gruesome, and some of it's quite human and mellow.
Yeah, birth isn't always beautiful and
Absolutely.
all, yeah, none of it is. I'm sure there are many people who would say, yeah, it's not this, well, you know, you have the baby and you feel great after it or anything, because the majority of people I know, it was pretty hellish.
Yeah. And there's a lot of loss even before a birth sometimes. And that's so important to show and to talk about and to witness on stage, actually. I mean, we do it in a very literal way and in a very poetic way, an abstract way as well, I think. So,
And obviously, you've talked about the reproductive justice as well, which I would imagine runs throughout this one. Yeah. And how important that is, especially just now. I saw a clip of a Christine Amanpour, and she must have been on, what was she on, Daily Show recently? And obviously it was everything that happened in Arizona last week, which is, for people listening that don't know, the reinstating of a law from 1867, something like that.
This is what I am, this is why I think it's so important to make political work, because that's the first thing that goes. It's always the body that's censored, and it's always dance. Actually, I mean, even just being in Switzerland last week, we were learning about, I'm going to say this wrong with my terrible accent, Budele dance, which is like this kind of step dance, which was banned when the kind of Christian church came into play, and basically banned dancing. I mean, this happened a lot of places, but this was a very strong traditional dance, and I've been searching for it because I'm obviously obsessed with Scottish Highland dance, and I'm in Switzerland like, hey, where's the traditional dance here? And they're like, we don't really have any, because it was totally banned like for so long that they don't really have a kind of tradition. And that this is, whether it's to do with trans rights or any bodies that are not the kind of male norm, that's a bit fucked. So we definitely need to dance about it.
we definitely do. And I like, so as I was saying, I would imagine that you've got lots of moments of that within futuristic folk tales as well. So as I said, you're currently out on tour, and you've just come back from Switzerland. How was that?
Sunny. I actually got sunburned.
Lovely. Lucky. But, I mean, it is actually sunny in Glasgow today, but it's freezing.
It was beautiful. We managed, well, we did three shows there, which is such a luxury, to be able to do three shows night after night. So we had our preview performance in Dundee at the space where I used to train, and then we went to Bern and swam in the Arra a bit, and got a bit sunburnt, and now we're in London. Yep.
And how did it go in Switzerland? Audience reaction, what you were hoping for?
We had a really great post-show discussion on the Thursday night, actually. People really, really saw and reimagined what we were getting at. Like lots of the key words from the copy, kind of protest, womb, birth, unbirth. Lots of reads of the show that were pretty spot on. We only had two walkouts, so that also feels like a good thing when people can't, maybe they're just not ready to receive the work, so that's all right. But that always sometimes feels like a compliment. So that's the first thing that's ever happened to me. So I was like, oh, that's quite cool. Spoken to them afterwards though, but yeah, that's all right. So
I mean, art is subjective, and if you're ready for it, you're ready for it. If you're not, you're not. And also, you want to make people feel something no matter what it is, right? So so you're at the place in London just now, and then you're coming back to Glasgow.
Yes, exactly. This Thursday the 18th, we will be performing at the place. And then next Friday the 26th at 7:30 p.m. or Saturday the 27th at 2 p.m. we will be at Tramway in T1, which feels very big and fancy, but we're going to have a good time.
And you've got a post-show discussion for the Glasgow date on the 26th. And do you have a post-show discussion in London?
Yeah, we do actually. We do. A past collaborator who's worked on the show, Rhys Dennis, is gonna host that discussion. And in Glasgow, Luke Pell, from the Workroom, is gonna host that discussion. So we're really looking forward to that. Yeah.
Amazing. What is it that you kind of? I know not everybody kind of hopes for an audience's reaction, but what is it that you want them to kind of take away from futuristic folk tales.
I would like audiences to take away the feeling of hope. There's so much art, dance, theatre at the moment that is this kind of mirror of society, this like this dark place. And that's all it is, and that's beautiful to watch, and we need to be confronted with these things, but we need to experience joy and hope as well, and especially that in a room together. So I hope audiences take away hope. And just hopefully the freedom and the confidence to speak about these taboo subjects and maybe ask a friend about it or be able to share kind of their experiences if they feel like it, because that just starts the ball rolling on kind of normalizing these very normal things.
Yeah,
Hope
on that, I just want to thank you as well for just being so open and honest with your story as well. Charlotte, I think it's super important. It's part of the reason why I always kind of try and mention my endometriosis and miscarriages, because it's super important that we have these conversations. And yeah, just thank you. And I know that the listeners of Persistent and Nasty will also appreciate that openness and honesty. Before we finish up, we like to ask our guests a question. cough, cough. honestly, ridiculous. Hanging out. So we're called Persistent and Nasty because of when we formed, it was very much in the cultural moment. There had been the hashtag Nasty Women on Twitter when the previous president of the United States called Hillary Clinton nasty for daring to give him some facts in a debate. And then Persistent, obviously, nevertheless, she persisted, but Persistent feels really strongly connected with so many of us that are doing work to push forward and push open conversations. But the nasty one in particular is also about a reclamation of words that gets used against those of us who happen to be female. Words like moany, bossy, you know, bitch, witch, all of that, and a kind of reclaiming of them. So we like to ask our guests, Charlotte McLean, what does the phrase persistent and nasty mean to you? And it can be positive, negative, nothing.
As you were describing it there, I was really thinking about resilience, and just this constant fight for survival. And I think persistent and nasty has a lot to do with that. Like, we're not going anywhere, nowhere. We're right in front of your door. So yeah, I think resilience, especially when experienced together, is so powerful. I mean, you can't have, well, there's no reason for a protest without hope, and persistent and nasty gives me resilient vibes. So taking on the world together, hopefully, would be the good thing to do.
Brilliant. Love it. Thanks, Charlotte. And just a reminder for everybody, you can see Futuristic Folk Tales at The Place in London on the 18th of April 2024, and then at the Tramway in Glasgow on Friday the 26th of April at 7:30, with a post-show discussion after that show, and then on Saturday the 27th at 2 p.m. And all the details for that will be linked in today's show notes. Thank you so much for joining me, Charlotte. I really appreciate it. And I hope that you have a great week in London.
Thank you very much. You too. So nice to meet you and chat with you.
So lovely to meet you too. And until next time, lovely listeners, stay
Stay
nasty.
nasty.